guys, thanks so much for listening. If you'd like to support us, please go to patreon.com/frightday.
Oh no, I forgot to write the show.
That's all right. Kelly will just chew ice into the microphone for just an hour and a half.
Give me 5 minutes. I'm going to really knock this one out of the park.
Okay.
Be hard not to.
Jesus Christ. Fright Day. My name is Byron McCoy. I'm your host.
I'm Kelly. I did that just because I knew it would make you mad.
Don't, you can't do that.
Because I did it out of order. Because you think I should know the format by now, Byron, because we've been doing it for 2 years. And that's what you say to me. You say, Kelly, seriously, we've been doing this for 2 years. How
what
do you not know the format?
The most silent of nights is spoiled by fright. Tonight we're reviewing Holiday Anthology, A Christmas Horror Story. And events that happened on December 6, 1959, left a Los Angeles house undesirable and empty for over 50 years. It's the Los Feliz murder house in Byron's cereal corner. And Anti Claus isn't the only evil going bump in the night. It's Christmas creepies other than Krampus. In this week's edition of Kelly's Cryptids and Conspiracies, I'm joined by Sam.
Hey, guys.
Hey, Byron! That's not the format!
And Kelly.
Hi guys, everybody, Merry Christmas!
Merry holidays, Christmas. Happy whatever you're doing.
Oh my gosh, by golly. It's time for mistletoe.
Okay, mistletoe.
It's my favorite Christmas song, you guys. Can we play it in the background?
Second favorite holiday?
First favorite holiday.
No, come on, Halloween.
First, second, and third favorite holidays.
You're an embarrassment.
Just Like Arrival is my first through 13th favorite movie of the year.
We have to unacceptable. Cut out so much of Kelly in this and pretend like she doesn't exist.
I'm going to allow hey most guys. Of it to stay in this week as a Christmas present to her and as a... as a punishment to our listeners.
Yeah. No, it was a present to the listeners. What'd you guys do this week? Anything fun? Anybody?
Are you really going to do this show? Kelly, it's fine. I did. I watched a couple things.
Yeah. Did you?
I did. Is that what you were wanting us to go to? Or you were talking about the things I did? I went on a jog yesterday.
You know what I think is kind of fun? Are you going to tell our listeners what you're doing for some poor, destitute inmates around the country this Christmas season?
I mean, that's not really anyone's business other than my own.
I mean, I think it's something we need to share.
I may or may not be sending some Christmas cards to incarcerated mass murderers.
You know, it's just really interesting the ways in which Byron decides to embrace the spirit of the season.
How I spend my free time, which is very little, is none of your business.
It's definitely related to the show. I'm just saying, if you are trying to convince me that those aren't hedging bets for future episodes of Byron's Cereal Corner, you're full of shit.
Well, I mean, it may come into play for sure.
It's obviously the sole
mostly,
purpose.
I mean, is it considered murderabilia if it's a Christmas card back from a murderer?
Oh, absolutely.
So it doesn't actually have to have had a role in the murders.
Oh, no.
It's like that check from Herb Baumeister.
Of or relating to a murder.
Perfect.
Slash murderers.
It really seems like there's a lot of money to be made there.
Well, I like it, Byron.
Thanks, Sam.
Good for you.
Yeah.
The jury's still out on that choice.
Good to have hobbies. Just make sure that you use your real address.
No, he's going to. He and I talked about it. I told him he wasn't allowed to use our P.O. box.
Of course
and
not. He's which
like,
is what?
No.
Just P.O. box 372.
He's like,
Lolo,
no, stop it. Don't do that.
No, it's for the people to send us presents.
You stop it. You shut up.
What if there are serial killers it's listening?
Fine. It's fine. Which is?
Guys.
P.O. Box 372, Lolo, Montana, 59847.
Send us your bones.
I don't like it. There might be serial
used
killers.
Used or otherwise.
I don't like it.
All right.
I'm going to start eating chips into the mic now,
please,
you guys.
Don't do that. So, and why don't you just
well,
start?
You're a nightmare person. Like, you're worse. Like, you know how bad you have to be worse than usual?
You guys.
You are worse than usual.
Kelly, tell me what you watched this week.
We watched this movie that came up in Netflix, and I was like, hey, Sam, this looks kind of fun. But it had one of my all-time favorite characters in it, Maggie from The Newsroom.
Who's actually a person in real life.
Her name is Emily Mortimer, and I really like her. She's like one of my faves. And I was like, oh, we should watch this because it has to do with special forces and with ghosts, Sam. It's like a movie for both of us. And then it was really bad.
Oh, no.
It was called Spectral. somewhere in some horrible Eastern Bloc place where these special forces were stationed, and they were being attacked by these invisible forces that turned out to be some mad science experiment from foreign military.
Maybe Russian. Okay.
Really selling that one.
But I mean, it was bad. And it started out bad.
The effects were terrible.
And then it got worse, and then it got worse, and then it got worse.
Oh no, triple worse.
It was so bad. It was really bad. And I just felt so sad the whole time for Emily Mortimer because she's
in so many good movies.
She just is good. She's amazing.
And Netflix has been doing really well.
Lars and the Real Girl?
Yeah, I think that maybe that's why this one isn't getting quite as much play.
Yeah.
You haven't heard much about it. But in case it pops up on your feed, I recommend you skip it.
Oh, no.
Yeah, move on to some of those awesome Christmas films like The Spirit of Christmas.
Mm-mm. And that's enough of that.
Sure, for sure.
Yeah.
How about you, Sam?
No.
Oh, Kelly's not done?
No, I wanted to. I think that you just need to acknowledge that someone
Sam, what did you watch this
movie? I watched a movie that kind of warned about itself in the title.
Okay.
Don't Go in the Woods.
Don't go in the woods. Something's out there. Something evil. Something so terrifying only screams can describe it. Hunters become the hunted. Every camper is fair game. When a walking nightmare turns a lush green forest crimson red with the fresh blood of each new victim. It started as a carefree weekend camping trip, but soon turned into an orgy of unrelenting horror. You can run. It will catch you. You can hide. It will find you. After that, you won't see the forest for the screams. Don't go in the woods. It's not just a warning. It's the only way to stay alive.
A slasher, I guess, about a whole forest full of real obnoxious pricks that get killed by this mountain man for some reason.
Well, why are they there?
Well, I think that's part of the statement, is that there are all these terrible people who don't respect nature, and there's this mountain man who lives there, and maybe it offends him. But I don't really know. The production values were very similar to Legend of Boggy Creek, which is to say not good.
Okay.
Allegedly, it was very controversial for its gore and dismemberments when it came out in 1981. Terrible. Terrible, although I will give them credit. It was practical. Terrible practical effects. You don't really ever
practical. It was 1981.
See anything. Well. The dialogue was migraine-inducing. You don't care about the bad guy. You don't care about the good guys. This was a terrible, terrible movie, which, unbeknownst to me at the time I started it, actually has a bit of a cult following as one of the worst slashers of all times, which I don't know if I'd go that far. It's unwatchable.
But you did it.
I did it, and I paused it to get the time remaining halfway through. This is on Shudder, by the way. I would have sworn that I'd been watching it for 2 hours, but the movie's only like an hour and 20 minutes long, and I was halfway through it. Bad. Just bad, bad, bad. Not good, bad, just bad.
Oh, that's kind of a sad week so far.
Yeah.
A couple misses.
So that's awesome.
But it's okay, because there were lots of good Christmas movies in between that I can't talk
about. Sure, can't talk about it.
What about you, Byron?
Oh, I saw something I actually quite enjoyed.
Really?
Well, that doesn't fit.
Well, I guess we'll skip it then.
No, I want to hear.
It's a little film that came out on Netflix. It's called The Good Neighbor.
Ladies and gentlemen, I present to you Exhibit C, the living room cam. The camera that ultimately captured the tragedy of the so-called haunting project. What ended up happening after the camera was turned off?
Is that the one with Macaulay Culkin?
No, it doesn't have a Culkin.
That's the good son.
This is a 2016 American thriller. It debuted at South by Southwest. It's been on my radar for quite some time. I know Brightday.com covered a couple teasers that they released. Oh. This is it's a story of a pair of mischievous high school students, Logan Miller and Keir Gilchrist, who you might know from It Follows.
And Tales of Halloween.
Yeah, you know the guy.
I don't, but that's okay.
They create the illusion of a haunting on an unsuspecting neighbor, played by James Caan.
Ooh, you don't screw with James Caan. That's a bad idea.
While keeping his reaction under surveillance, they see much more than they bargained for and discover that the man they're tormenting is not the easy target they suspected.
Oh, I hope he totally messes with them. You know why I like James Caan?
Well, why is that?
Because he's an elf.
No, stop it.
He's an elf.
He is an elf.
He plays Buddy's dad.
I went on a date elf. With your sister at Elf.
You know, the thing is, James Caan is pretty good.
Yeah, he's all right. He's pretty good.
He's in two of the best movies ever, Elf and The Godfather.
He plays a very intense character, and he does an impressive performance. And I thought Keir Gilchrist, I love seeing him always. Especially,
where is this movie? Where can one watch it?
It's on Netflix.
I want to see it. Okay, I want to see it.
Were you not listening?
No, I wasn't. I was kind of tuning out until I heard it had Buddy the Elf's dad in it.
All right. It cuts back and forth from found footage to third person, and it goes back and forth into the courtroom. So you're not really sure what's going on. Does a great job of unveiling itself.
I like unveiling.
Unveeling?
It's like veal.
It's like peeling the skin off a young calf.
Yeah.
All right.
Unveiling.
It's an interesting concept, especially the found footage stuff, although financially improbable. The concept works, and it really does depict annoying teens in a realistically annoying fashion. It doesn't go above and beyond like many films that we've seen recently. Tense. I really liked it.
Are you chewing on a toothpick?
No, I'm chewing on like one of those little plastic things.
All right, I'm going to ask you put that away.
Well, okay. I ate all my ice already.
That's fine. You don't need to chew on anything. We're fucking podcasting.
It was making no noise. It was silent.
You were talking like you've been kicked in the head by a horse.
You look like you've been kicked in the head by a horse.
Let's try to finish the show.
Merry Christmas.
Yes.
But that's all I watched this week.
Well, I suppose that's okay.
I was busy reading.
Yeah.
Into a story.
Ooh.
I'm looking forward to this one.
Ugh, great.
You know what time it is.
Byron's Cereal Corner. Did you see somebody's suggestion about doing a cereal corner?
Yeah.
I think we should have Sam's Cereal Corner because Sam's the one that
Sam
really
loves
cereal.
Sam does love cereal. Yeah. But that's not what we're doing right now.
Okay, we're doing the other cereal.
Fire emergency.
Please don't.
Hey, they found the bodies of at least three young boys, six more bodies under the John Gacy house. And
one longtime acquaintance describes Dahmer as one weird dude.
Stay tuned for Byron's Cereal Corner.
2475 Glendore Place, a Spanish revival mansion nestled at the foot of Griffith Park in Sam's favorite city, Los Angeles.
Sam doesn't like Los Angeles.
I like the people.
No, he doesn't like the people either. He doesn't like the people anywhere, and he really hates Los Angeles.
Built in 1925, this three-story, four-bedroom house with a library, formal dining room, grand entrance, which, what is a grand entrance? Just a large space where you walk in?
Big, yeah,
typically
yeah, big.
With a windy staircase.
Oh, it did have a ballroom with a bar?
So where a debutante would debut.
This is like the coolest house ever.
Well, this cool house sat empty for over five decades.
That's almost, wow.
Frozen in time following the grisly events that took place on the night of December 6th, 1959. Much like 10050 Kewkee Drive, the site of the 1969 Tate murders committed by the Manson family, which, of course, is a place I've visited before.
God, Byron.
Definitely took a selfie or two. The Los Feliz murder mansion has become quite the macabre tourist attraction. Rumors ranging from neighbors reporting paranormal activity to dusty, faded Christmas presents still wrapped in under a dead but decorated pine tree. This neighborhood, at the eastern end of the Santa Monica Mountains, Santa is famed for its spookiness. Mountain lions prowl here. Hunters have found several limbs of victims in the undergrowth of this neighborhood. Stuff like that.
Ugh.
But I mean, where in LA hasn't there been a severed arm?
There are limbs under every bush in Los Angeles.
It really makes me wonder why you don't like Los Angeles, Sam.
Well, he visits there every weekend.
I like the people.
A house right down the street at 2607 was actually used for the exterior shots of the 1959 B-movie House on Haunted Hill.
It's a great flicker.
I wouldn't say that's a B-movie. That is quality.
Pretty cool.
Vincent at his finest.
But even cooler than a cinematic murder house is the real thing. So before I get too far in the story, I want to mention that most of the information for this I got from an article by an LA crime journalist named Jeff Maish. Great stuff.
You guys buddies?
No, I wish. February 1st, 1909, in New York City, Harold Perelson took his first breath. His father, Henry, a Polish printer's clerk, which a clerk at a printer?
I don't understand.
Is that,
that
what that is?
Yeah.
His mother, Molly, a Russian who fled Eastern Europe to escape imperial repression, land shortages, and chronic unemployment. The Perelsons were some of the 13.5 million immigrants that flocked to the United States in search for the American dream. 50 years later, their son would be responsible for an American nightmare.
God. Byron. Oh my God.
The Pearlsons settled on Pitkin Avenue in Queens, New York. Harold was the eldest of four children. I wish I knew more about his upbringing, but the details are very thin here.
Well, clearly there was something wrong.
I mean, we'll find out later. I do know that Harold was sent to medical school where he, quote...
Was sent to medical school?
Well, yeah, his parents sent him to
like
medical
forcibly.
School. I have no idea, but he had a quick mind and entrepreneurial spirit. After graduation, he moved from the tough streets of New York to sunny Southern California. On my way to sunny California. Where he landed a job at the Inglewood Physician's Office, published several papers in the field of neurology, eventually becoming a cardiology professor at USC School of Medicine. So he knew his stuff.
Good school.
He's a smart man, and he's a hard worker.
Yep.
Success, satisfaction, riches came quick, and it sounds like he deserved it. He's a pretty busy doctor. He did a good job.
Sounds lucky to me.
And his personal life also thrived. Henry married a second-generation immigrant, much like himself, from Cuyahoga Falls, Ohio?
Cuyahoga.
Leave it to Sam.
Her name was Lillian Silver. They had three children, Judy, which could be Judy, but I'm going to go with Judy for comfort.
Yeah, I think it is Judy.
Debbie and Joel. The hunt for their dream home began, settling on a $60,000, which is $500,000 today.
$60,000 was half a million nowadays?
Yeah, isn't that crazy?
Still a good deal, though.
Mansion, 2475 Glendower Place.
Yeah.
Seems like trouble always starts when you try to find your dream home. Becomes a bit of a nightmare home, right?
It never turns out that way. Yeah, it always transitions.
Right, guys?
Yeah, nightmare. Yeah.
So this home, originally designed in 1925 for a man named Harry F. Schumeister, upon his death, a deed was signed on December 6th, 1932, which is a funny coincidence.
Ooh, December 6th, yeah.
Yeah. Sometime after 1933, a man named Frederick Zelick, influential director of German silent cinema, moved in after fleeing Hitler's rise to power in 1933. So that's kind of interesting. When Harold purchased the premises in the 1950s, it was described as a, quote,
delightful 12-room home with terraced lawn, artistic gardens, and a magnificent view. This spacious tiled entrance and hallway led to a charming living room, a glass conservatory, dining room, den, breakfast room, and kitchen.
Wow, can we stop the story right here? I'm so happy. This house sounds amazing.
It's beautiful. Get this. The second floor had four master bedrooms and three baths, while the third floor boasted a bar and a ballroom. That's kind of like your house. You have a third floor ballroom, don't you?
Totally.
We do, with really nice parquet floors.
Ooh. There were staff quarters as well, but the only staff the family had was a teenage babysitter named Sherry Lewis, who was their neighbor. When asked if she saw any hint of violence in the patriarch, Dr. Harrelson, she said, quote, there wasn't anything strange or bizarre. He was quite a mild-mannered man.
Of course, let's just be honest. This was the 1950s, and it was, like, not strange or bizarre for a man to come home and smack the shit out of his wife at that
Very
point.
Gentle, she goes on.
Hmm.
He gave good injections. Well, hang with me here. You see, Harold was actually an injection specialist.
Sounds like a nurse, not a doctor.
On December 30th, 1938, he actually filed a patent for a medical device, an attachment to hypodermic syringes designed to inject drugs directly from sealed glass capsules, which, of course, reduces the danger of contamination and spillage. I've got actual images of this patent in the show notes of this episode at FrightDay.com.
Wow.
Does that answer your questions?
There you go, Phil.
After working on this for over a decade, he entered into a verbal agreement with a man named Edward Shustak in 1949. They agreed to split the profits 50-50. But of course, it wasn't going to be a smooth ride for Perelson. He invested $24,496, $7,000 of that, which was from Lillian, his wife's personal savings account, into this project. And that's a lot of money. Remember, they bought their house for $60,000. What Harold didn't know was that his partner had no intentions of ever giving him any of this money. In a complaint filed on July 21st, 1952, Perelson claimed that Shustak, using a fake name, double-crossed him. They went to court, and he sued him for $100,000, which is nearly $1 million today. The case was long and drawn out, and eventually, after 2 years, he was only awarded $23,956.
Oh boy, that'd be enough to really piss a guy off.
It wasn't even as much as he initially invested into the project. And also, it's not even known if the syringe ever came to market, which is bizarre. Just a very sad situation for this man. 3 years later, though, worse luck arrived for the Perelson family. On November 3rd, 1957, Judy was driving her siblings in her father's 52 Oldsmobile. As she crossed the intersection of Vermont and Los Feliz Boulevard, she collided with another car. Judy suffered hand and knee injuries, concussion, and severe shock. Young Joel had a head injury and severe shock to the nervous system, which...
Is that even a diagnosis?
I don't know.
It's 2016.
It was 1957. But Deborah, the youngest, her cheek was sliced open. The other driver, Eleanor Keller, claimed that Judy, then 16, drove through the red light without looking.
And there are no traffic cams or anything.
Not that
then. No, no, there weren't.
But the now judicially experienced Harold took the Keller family to court, demanding $20,000 in damages for each daughter and $10,000 for his son. So I wonder who his favorites were.
What a dick move. Like, you just put a dollar value on each of your children.
Maybe a shock to the nervous system is that just being spooked a bit?
Or maybe the son is just a huge disappointment.
It could very well be. He did win the case, though, guys, but was only awarded a fraction of what they sought, and that was only enough to cover the medical bills.
Son of a bitch.
Things are not working out for the Perelsons. Harold had a couple of coronaries, which landed him in a coronary ward.
I like that it's a coronary ward.
Yeah, they had a lot more wards back then.
Yeah, I'm glad they did away with wards.
In a letter to her aunt, Judy said, quote, "My family are on the merry-go-round again," which I think sounds kind of exciting. "Same problems, same worries, only tenfold." So... yeah, cancel the fun thing. Never mind. And this was all before the 1959 murder-suicide. According to yearbooks, Judy was one of the cool kids, a member of something called the Girls League, and secretary of the...
Girls League. Did they go to the girls'
crime fighters?
Female crime fighting league.
No.
I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, like shitty 50s superheroes.
That sounds bad.
She was also the secretary of the student body. Outside of school, she was an usherette, which is a fun word I didn't know before reading.
No, it's a good... I know that one.
Slap et on the end of something, and it's adorable.
Actorette. Yeah.
Oh.
Huntington Hartford Theater, and that's on Hollywood and Vine, so that's a happening place. She also loved to shop.
Uh-oh.
Remember that neighbor, Sherry Lewis, that I mentioned earlier?
Mm-hmm.
She recounted towers of shoeboxes in this house, which some can be seen in the show notes of this episode of FrightData.com and some pictures. Apparently, the family's financial situation didn't faze her, as she was also seen driving a sports car right before the killings.
Where was this money coming from?
Yeah.
Her father was changing.
Embezzlement?
No longer driven by ambition to succeed, heal, or help. And who could blame him, honestly? I mean...
Okay, it wasn't that bad. Come on.
He had a couple serious hits here, but I mean, I guess he is in a million-dollar mansion.
Yeah, so. And come on. Like, people take things a lot worse than that.
He's a bit of a shit hand. Let's be real.
Yeah.
The frustrated doctor became darker, turning to, quote, melancholy books.
Uh-oh.
So in 57, though, let's be honest.
What was a melancholy book in 1957?
I don't know.
Dostoevsky, I assume?
I still don't think you should blame the books. I like melancholy things.
I mean, well, you had to blame something. Video games weren't around.
That's true. Here we go, guys. December 6th, 1959.
Mm-hmm.
The sun sets around 5 p.m. Lillian Perelson had eaten a dinner of green beans before retiring to bed.
Ooh, that was her last meal?
Whatever happens to her. Fudge. What a fucking monster.
I'm about to get into some serious shit here, guys.
Oh, God.
As she slept soundly in her nightdress, her head resting on the pillow of the marital bed on the second floor, by midnight, the temperature had dropped into the 40s.
Yeah, everything dies in Los Angeles at 40 degrees.
There was not a sound at Glendover Place at 4:30 a.m. when Harold stood over the bed with a ball peen hammer in his
hand. Okay, so hold up. Where has he been?
He was in the house.
Home?
He's just in
the
house.
So did he eat green beans too? Is this why he's doing
right.
this?
I don't know the fact of what he ate for dinner.
Maybe he found out that she ate green beans for dinner.
Okay, I'm just curious.
Lillian didn't have a chance to scream. He bashed her in the head so hard it left a 1-inch hole in the back of her head that soaked her pillow entirely with blood.
So what was he
used the round end.
For?
He used the domed end of the ball peen hammer, it sounds like.
Yeah, and I always thought it was ball teen.
No, peen. That's for peening things.
What was he so pissed at her for?
Well,
the shoes. God damn it.
Honestly, it's kind of the mystery. It was the daughter who liked the shoes.
Oh, that's right.
Lillian, she didn't deserve this. No one deserves this. Seeing what he'd done, he turned and walked out of the bedroom. He opened the door to the ensuite bathroom and passed through another door that led to his eldest daughter's bedroom, where her name was marked on a sticker on the light switch. just in case he forgets her name. That's right. I'm in my oldest daughter's room. He struck her too, guys, without warning, over the head with the same hammer. Lucky it was just a glancing blow, and she let out a scream. And this is one hell of a scream, guys. This scream was so otherworldly that the neighbors all sat up straight in their beds. Apparently he told Judy, after he hit her in the head, to lay still and keep quiet.
Yeah, because who's going to do that?
Please don't. That's absurd. Please be quiet.
Just shut up.
But she didn't, guys. She did the right thing. Remember that neighbor? The babysitter?
Yeah.
So she's over at her house, and she hears the scream. She's having a sleepover with her friend Shelly, and they both thought when they heard the first scream that it was a wild animal. But upon hearing the voice again screaming, "Don't kill me," they knew it was Judy.
That's pretty bad.
You're having a sleepover with your friend. You hear what could be an animal screaming.
But then it starts screaming to not kill me.
Yeah, that's dark.
You say, "God, is Byron over there or something?"
Hey.
What? That's a...
Judy somehow managed to get past her blood-soaked father and made her way to her parents' room, which is where she saw her mother and what her father had done
rough.
To.
Yeah, rough.
Not great. She ran down the hallway, down the spiral staircase, out the front door.
Whoa!
She's... What?
What about her freaking brother and sister?
She just has a head wound.
She just got hit in the head with a ball
peen
hammer.
What a bitch!
Okay, I don't know about that.
I think that she is responding in a way that makes sense.
She ran across the street to the Lewis house, where she desperately banged her hands on the front door, and receiving no immediate response, she moved over to the French window, smearing blood all over them.
Hold on, I thought you said these people were home.
They were home. Get this. Upstairs, the babysitter Sherry and her guest sat frozen in fear.
Fucking awful humans.
Judy. Wow. Well,
it's a stressful situation.
Bullshit.
It's not.
They were children. They were 14 at the time.
I don't give a shit.
Judy tried another neighbor, though. This man named Marshall Ross finally opened the door, and together they both called the police.
I'll hold the phone, Judy. You dial the 9.
All right.
I'll dial the 1, and then you dial the last 1.
What about the
we'll
little
do it
siblings?
Together.
I'm getting to it.
The poor little kids.
Back at the now murder mansion. This is what's officially...
It was a mansion before.
Yeah. It's made the transition. Okay.
Murder mansion.
The younger Harrelson children have woken up.
Uh-oh.
Harold slowly approached his 11-year-old daughter, Debbie, and says, "Go back to bed. This is a nightmare."
So why doesn't he want to kill them?
Shit.
I mean, I'm glad he doesn't, but why doesn't he want to kill them?
I don't know. He walked away, dripping blood all over the floor.
Ugh.
From the body of his now deceased wife. It's covering his arms and his shoulder. Marshall Ross, the neighbor, now we've got a hero on our hands. He approached the house.
Well, thank God somebody's a decent person in this.
Climbing the front steps and entering the house, where he found Debbie and the 13-year-old boy, Joel, waiting on the first floor. He then went upstairs, which is something I would have never done. I can't believe he did this. He went upstairs and came face to face with the doctor, who said, "Go on home. Don't bother me."
Interesting.
Marshall watched Harold enter his bedroom.
A little busy here.
Obviously, I got a little home improvement job going on.
Just come back later.
Harold opened up his medicine drawer, pulling out bottles and boxes of medicine, as he was a doctor, staining all of the labels with blood. He opened up two capsules of something called Nembutal. Do you know
Nembutal.
What that is?
Nembutal.
Yep. Yeah. A barbiturate. He mixed it with water. Always a good time for a fun fact. Nembutal is actually known as death in a bottle.
Ooh.
Yeah, I don't think it's... They don't...
I don't think they...
Use it anymore, no. Do they?
You don't hear it anymore.
Oh, they do still use it.
Oh, really?
It's a short-acting barbiturate. It's a sterile solution for intravenous or intramuscular injection, mm-hmm. intramuscular injection.
Interesting. And this is actually the same thing that killed Judy Garland.
Oh, she OD'd, yeah.
Yeah. He swallowed this mixture. And to double down, he downed 31 white pills, which are believed to be codeine or a tranquilizer of some sort.
I feel like those probably could have done it on their own.
I don't know. This death in a bottle stuff probably is the safe bet.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but 31 pills of codeine would probably
That'll
push you.
The last thing his neighbor recounted seeing was the doctor lying down on a bed waiting for the drugs to work.
Wait, so the neighbor's hanging out watching him do all this?
I think he's probably pretty fucked up. You know, you see something like this and then a man just in a daze kind of walks around.
Yeah.
And he just is watching him? He's just like,
what
hey,
would
dude.
You do? I think I would do pretty much the same
I
thing.
I think I'd either stop him or leave.
Stop him from what? Drinking water?
Well, then I'd get out of there. Like, he just murdered somebody.
He did. and attempted to kill another person.
And during this whole time, the cops still haven't shown
up. Oh, get this. It took 15 minutes for the police to arrive. At 5:15, LAPD detectives entered, finding him laying on the floor, his head resting on a pillow, covered with his daughter's blood, the hammer in his hand. He was breathing, though, but was dead before the ambulance could arrive. The police gathered the rest of the pills and laid them on a dresser in his room, and that's where they discovered on a nightstand a copy of Dante's The Divine Comedy.
Huh. So these were the melancholy books that he was reading. Okay.
It was open to Canto 1. Midway upon the journey of our life, I found myself within a dark forest, for the straightforward pathway had been lost.
What a friggin' asshole.
Yeah. The next morning, when the mother of the neighbor slash babysitter Cherry's guest, Shelley, that was a confusing sentence I just said. The mother of the neighbor slash babysitter Cherry's guest, Shelley.
Shelley's ma.
When she arrived, she found the door smeared with blood and the knobs sticky.
So this girl still hadn't told anybody or done anything. Rotten humans.
I'm going to hunt her down
and tell her she's a bitch.
She's still alive. You could. She was actually was a big part of this story.
Yeah, I'd hunt her down.
Lillian's cause of death, the mom, was actually asphyxiation. She drowned in her own blood. So the head wound didn't kill her.
Mm. Well, I mean, it kind of did, just a roundabout way.
A year later, in 1960, the mansion was sold in auction to a Lincoln Heights couple. They did not move in.
Why?
No one did.
Why would they buy it and not move in?
I don't know. The house just sat there.
Okay, so what's the point? Why?
I don't know. In 1994, Emily Enriquez, the new owner, died, leaving the house to her son, Rudy. He chose not to move in as well, but occasionally used the house for storage of his belongings left to him by friends who have passed away.
Okay, so this is crazy. So this family owns this million-dollar house, uh-huh. and they're just sitting on it.
Yeah. Bought at auction, and then they just did nothing with it. But I do have a couple strange things that you may notice in some pictures that I posted in the show notes of this episode at Friday.com. Oh, I threw up a little bit. It's a dark one. There's a case of SpaghettiOs, which didn't come to market until 1965.
Are you sure that the Enriquez's?
Well, and there was also a copy of Life magazine photographed by Jennifer Clay that features the actress Yvette Mimmo. And that's dated May 9th, 1960, which is 5 months after the murder. And also, weird fact here, remember that Christmas tree I mentioned at the top in the living room?
Mm-hmm.
It may have been there, but the Perelsons were Jewish.
I know a lot of Jews with Christmas trees.
That's true. It's kind of a fun event for everyone.
Yeah.
The legend suggests,
it comes from a secular tradition as well.
That's true. Legend suggests, though, that a new family briefly rented the home and were not told of the tragedy. It's their Christmas tree that remained. And the rumor is that this new family fled the house on the anniversary of the murder-suicide.
Oh, interesting.
You know Amityville Horror?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of like that.
Well, but I want to hear about the ghostesses.
Honestly,
who interviewed the family that fled? Somebody talked to
no
me about
this. No one knows. This
Byron.
Is a legend and rumor.
It's very shrouded in mystery.
What happened to the Perelson children?
Yeah, I want to know what happened to Judy, who abandoned her siblings.
Someone claiming to be related to the Perelsons said that Judy changed her name, like, quote, 10,000 times over the years, and that her brother moved to Israel, becoming Hasidic, and won't talk to anyone.
Well, can't say you blame him.
No, absolutely not. I don't have any answers about this mystery at all, but I have a little bit of an update.
What's the update?
Just this year, a couple purchased the house for $2.289 million, saying they intended to fix it up and live there.
See, that's surprising to me.
Less than the, $2.75 million that they were initially asking for?
Yeah, I'd take it.
Really
it's
surprising.
A great house.
It's beautiful, but it is trashed right now.
Yeah,
I guess it
squat.
Was trashed. I don't know what it looks like right now. Maybe there's updated pictures.
It looks like Krusty's and monkeys have been living in it for the last 50 years.
But reportedly, right before its remodel, all that remained of those Christmas presents was a gold ribbon and a gift box lid.
Ugh.
I kind of like the idea that they were using the movie presents that have a lid on them.
I like that too.
So that's the Los Feliz murder house, guys.
That's a great story, Byron.
Hey, thank you so much.
I like that a
horrible
lot.
Horrible story.
It is a horrendous tale. I'm glad that I got to ruin your Christmas a little bit.
It's so weird, though. Normally people, what's the kid from the Amityville house? What's his name?
Little Ronnie DeFeo.
Were the DeFeos the family who originally had
the murder fest
there? And then the follow-up murders were not the DeFeos, they were the
Lutz.
Lutz,
Daniel
yeah.
Lutz.
Yeah. who's just a total tool in the documentary.
Little Daniel Lutz.
But in that situation, they have done everything they possibly can to seek out fame and keep their name in the paper.
These people shut everything out.
Yeah. We have the internet and we can't find out anything about them.
There's a lot of stories that I left out here of people breaking in. There's a security system that was in place that deterred a lot of people from coming in. One person who snuck in right as the security system went off, a black widow bit her arm and she had to go to the hospital. It's kind of a bummer. Neighbors also hear things. There's no real paranormal activity.
How has Zach Bagans not been here?
It wasn't Zach. Another team went here. I don't know any of the details, but I imagine they heard something.
Of course they heard something.
Of course they did.
But it's been closed up. I mean, just to have access to it would be incredible.
Spooky place. I'm happy someone bought it. I'm sad it wasn't me.
Yeah.
But I am excited to hear about these non-Krampus ghouls.
Non-Krampus ghouls? Christmas ghouls?
Yeah.
There are some good ones.
So what do we got?
We have Christmas creepies other than Krampus.
In this week's edition of Kelly's Cryptids and Conspiracies.
Kelly's Cryptids and Conspiracies.
Well, you guys, we got a lot of info last year about Krampus, if you'll recall.
Do you guys know that we missed Krampus Day this year?
Krampus Nacht.
Well, okay.
Yeah.
I remember we were planning on celebrating.
And then we didn't. We
have big plans, and that's what makes us great people.
Yeah, I know.
I hope you enjoyed your Krampus Nacht.
Yeah, I hope you did too. It turns out that in places more fun and interesting than America, there are lots of creepy characters that come into play around Christmas time. And we're going to talk about a few more of them tonight. Obviously, the most well-known one is Krampus, but you guys know everything there is to know about Krampus now.
Sure. And if not, you can go back to episode 51.
Yeah. First thing, you guys know that I like cats. I mean, I'm not like a cat lady, but I like cats.
Cats are pretty nice. You don't have a cat?
We do have a cat. Ironically, we got it.
Oh, you do have a cat. I never see it, though.
Yeah, we got one like the first year that Sam and I lived here, and it was because I really wanted a cat and Sam couldn't stand cats. And then we got the cat, and the cat hates me and loves Sam.
Doesn't hate you. It hates everyone.
But loves Sam.
That's probably why I never see it.
There is a cat in Iceland known as the Yule Cat, which is a monster that wreaks havoc on children around Christmas time.
Okay, so wreaks havoc. Like, what does it do to them?
It's ginormous, and it's supposed to lurk in the countryside, specifically when there's a lot of snow out, specifically around Christmas time, and it eats people who have not received new clothes to wear before Christmas Eve. Now, I'm trying to think of, like, the logic behind
this.
Seems
like this is made up by the JCPenney's corporation.
Yeah.
Well, but it's just mean. Like, you think about if poor people can't afford new clothes,
they get eaten. It's kind of like the Purge.
Yeah, so you guys will hear tonight that there are quite a few evil Icelandic characters. It's a really cool country that I'd love to visit, but I'll tell you what, I want nothing to do with it around Christmas time because apparently it's just full of devilish shitheads.
Not even Sigur Rós could fix this?
I don't know. They might sing a real sad song and make the Yule Cat... Yeah.
I have a real hard time with that language.
We saw Sigur Rós.
Oh, really?
Did we?
Yeah, Sam was real unimpressed.
The Sigur Rós Museum?
Yeah, that's what he called their performance.
What? It's beautiful.
It is beautiful. It's fairly stationary, though.
Yonzi kills it. He does the bow on the guitar and goes...
I think it's musically very impressive.
Animatronic.
But it is rather low energy.
All right.
Okay. So people, you know, threatened by getting eaten.
So it's like a huge werecat.
The only logic I've been able to find behind it is that people were terrified, but this sounds like it's grown people, not children. People were terrified of getting eaten, so the workers at wool mills would be pushed to finish processing the autumn wool before Christmas.
Sure.
So that everybody could get new clothes.
Sounds like the invention of a clever boss.
People who took place in the work and really cranked it out would get new clothes. Those who didn't work quite hard enough would get nothing. Potential victims for this evil cat.
It's kind of a weird bonus.
It's a weird thing in general. Other interpretations have been that the cat just eats away the food of people without new clothes rather than eating the actual people.
Because people that can't afford new clothes can afford to have their food taken away also.
Yeah. And
that's a dick move.
So the Icelandic name for it, and I clearly do not speak the language, Jólakatturin. There's a poem by the same name. If you are so inclined, that seems to be what's perpetuated this monstrous cat image. So that's a fun one. If we go over to Germany and Austria, which just so you know, those are not two places that you want to call the same thing. It's kind of like New Zealand and Australia.
Do people do that?
Distinct cultures, distinct people. I'll tell you what, though. One of them invented schnitzel. They've got my vote.
Oh, my God.
So... Tales told, however, in both Germany and Austria, we'll talk about this evil witch named Frau Percha. She hands out both good things and bad things during the holidays, and it happens during the 12 days of Christmas, which traditionally actually begins on December 25th and goes until January 6th, which is the Epiphany.
You don't get to extend Christmas, Kelly. Heads up.
I'm very well may.
No, no.
Her gruesome punishment for those who are wrongdoers is ripping out your internal organs and replacing them with garbage.
Oh, no.
Yeah. So Frau Percha...
I already feel like that after I eat Taco Bell. I don't need it to actually happen.
She's real mean. And if you look in our show notes, you can see a really nice photo of her. It looks like something that started with the evil witch from Wizard of Oz and then devolved very seriously from there.
So what if you just avoid it? I mean, I know that she gives good things and bad things. I'd rather just not take that chance.
Yeah.
I'd roll the bones.
But I think it's not like you get to choose whether she's going to give something to you. If you were a bitch, then you're getting your organs ripped out and replaced with garbage.
What do you get if you're a sweetheart?
There's less talk about that. I think it's just more the traditional, like, little toys.
A trinket.
Yeah. I don't think it's anything big. The origin of her story, people believe, is this alpine goddess of nature, which basically takes care of the forest most of the year and then deals with humans only during the Christmas time. In more modern celebrations, Percha, or a very close likeness to Percha, shows up during processions of Fastnacht, which is the Alpen festival, just before Lent. There has been some connection between Frau Percha and the Italian witch La Befana, a fun legend, though not nearly as evil as Frau Percha. La Befana is ugly, but she's not mean. She just leaves presents for people.
Oh,
she's ugly?
Nice. Yeah, she's real ugly, but she's real nice.
I mean, I bet she's beautiful on the inside.
I'm sure she is. She's probably like, yeah, it's going to go down fairy tale lane. Okay, so.
Oh, no.
No, you won't.
Avoid that road.
So, Frau Percha, you want to be good, because if she finds out that you've been bad, you get garbage colon. Just, you know, word to the wise, especially if you're in Germany or Austria. Of course, if part of that garbage includes schnitzel and she's replacing your internal organs with schnitzel.
You can't be a person anymore then if
death
they do that.
By schnitzel? Oh. You are what you eat or is shoved in you.
Right. Well, there's that. These guys were bouncing back to Iceland, guys. They're called the Yule Lads.
That sounds like a barbershop
yeah,
quartet.
Yeah, exactly what that sounds like. A holiday barbershop quartet.
Funny you say that because it's actually a band of bearded wild men numbering 13 that come down from the mountains on December 12th. And every night for 13 days, they play hijinks on people.
Oh, it's kind of like winter trick-or-treating.
A little bit. They're supposed to be sons of this amazing child-eating troll, which I'm going to talk about in a minute as well.
Does that make them trolls?
I think so.
Or half-trolls?
I think they're at least half, possibly full, but they seem to get around pretty well. They seem more nimble than your average troll. They're basically...
Racist!
The article that I read from Mental Floss describes them as large, slightly unsettling versions of Snow White's Seven Dwarfs. They each have their own little gig and their own silly name and their own demands. So, for example, there's one named Spoon Licker who requires a batter-covered spoon be left out for him to lick. Yes, this is true. There's the Sheep Wearier who tries to harass the sheep. And there's the Meat Hook.
Oh, wait, let me guess. You have to leave meat on a hook for him.
He wants specifically smoked lamb, which he steals with his hook.
I do want to request that Meat Hook is my new nickname.
Okay.
It's kind of good.
It is a good name.
Hey, Meat Hook, what you doing this Friday?
I'll take Spoon Licker.
Oh, God.
I really like, I'm a batter licker myself. Oh, I like spoons.
Gross. Who else we got?
Okay, so in exchange, if the family actually acquiesces to all of these implicit requests, kids receive a small gift in their shoes each night. But bad children get? What do you think the bad children get, guys?
Gut garbage.
A raw potato.
Oh, bummer.
Yeah. Apparently, this is a more jolly version than what they used to be. A number of centuries ago, they were kind of in cahoots with Krampus and the Yule Cat. They did not do raw potatoes, but actually went straight to kidnapping naughty children and eating them.
Do you think these are like the little elves in the Krampus movie that came out last year?
It could be.
Interesting.
It could be. It also could be like the evil zombie elves in the movie we watched this week. But
ooh, we'll get to it.
Yeah. Apparently in 1932, the mean guys got a little bit of a makeover in a more jolly framed poem called Hola Vit. Nope, not even going to try.
Okay.
Yep.
It's a good attempt.
Yeah.
No, got three syllables
it's
in.
It's like nine syllables long with some symbols that I don't understand.
Holvixen daughter.
Holas venasivizur.
No.
Yeah, it was better when you didn't.
I'm sorry. But the Yule lads are kind of, nowadays when they show up, they've got red costumes. They look a lot like Santa. And they have big sacks of toys. Again, a lot like Santa. They're just kind of ripping Santa off these days. I still don't understand really how they coerce good behavior out of the children, though. Really, it seems like what they're coercing is the parents to leave out all this weird, random stuff. Like meat and sheep. It just seems like a weird combo. But they're still fun. They're very, very fun. We're going to talk about their mother, the big troll lady, last. It's going to be our closer for the night.
The mother of trolls?
The mother of the Yule Lad trolls specifically. But we're going to work in one more. Père Fouettard. Sam told me the pronunciation there, so pardon all French speakers if that's wrong. And this is a French legend, this gentleman, and his name translates apparently to Father Whipper, which makes him sound much more benign than he actually is.
No, it sounds like he whips people.
Yeah, no. I promise it makes him sound much more benign than he actually is.
Oh.
The origin story for Mr. Fouettard is pretty grim. The legend of him starts back in about 1150, apparently. In some versions of the story, he was an innkeeper. In other versions, he was a butcher. But he apparently captured three boys who were well-to-do, financially speaking, on their way to a religious boarding school. For some reason, alone. I don't know who does that, but somebody shipped them off alone. Fouettard and his wife killed the children in order to rob them. And in one version of the story, they drug the children, slit their throats, cut them into pieces, and stewed them in a barrel. So this is like Byron's kind of dude.
In a barrel. He was a hobo? And that's also, that's offensive.
A bit.
But he sounds like a serial killer, and Byron likes those.
I don't like them.
I don't know how many times you can explain. There's a difference between being interested in something and being fascinated by it and being
Byron is interested in these kinds of people. But Saint Nick saves the day and resurrects them. Which I didn't realize Saint Nick had the power to do, but he did. Anyhow, after
he brought
that,
them back from stew form?
Yeah. And then for some reason, the reaction to this whole ordeal was that Fouettard became Saint Nick's partner. And then another version says that he became Saint Nick's eternal assistant who had to do all his bitch work for him.
I'd watch that movie.
I totally would.
Yeah.
It's a little bit grim. I'm not sure that I like this one, but I knew you guys would like it, so I wanted to tell you about it. In most other countries, America is definitely the exception, but as you know, in most other countries, Saint Nick has like this counterpart that takes care of the shitheads. And it sounds like that's kind of the role that Fouettard stepped into. So kind of like a Krampus, he would dispense punishment to the bad children on Saint Nicholas Day. But I'll tell you what, if I were a little kid, and in America we have, oh, if you're bad, you get coal. In apparently France or Iceland or any of these other places, if you're bad, you get a whole nother gentleman who comes and does something fucking horrible to you.
I think it's more unsettling.
Like possibly butchering you and putting you in a barrel.
See, this man is more unsettling than Krampus to me because it's a man. Like even Saint Nick feels like a mythical creature.
But yeah. Saint Nick can give you coal.
This man makes you into stew because he's hungry in the winter.
Yeah, pretty gross. I mean, my advice to you is around Christmas time, it seems like America's probably the best place to be. I'm not a nationalist by any sense, but I do think just for safety's sake, just stick around here during the holidays. And if you need any more reason to believe that, we are going to talk about the mother of the Yule lads, Gryla. The last reason you need at least not to visit Iceland during the holidays. As with most fabulous Christmas stories, Gryla emerged first during pagan tales way back in the day. She's a giant troll with hooves for feet and has 13 tails, One for each of her 13 son. Kiddos.
Ah, that's cool. Do you think they popped out when she had each one?
Or like did every
she
time always it, like, have it? It like forked off every time she spit out another
like,
kid?
Or every time she gets pregnant, her tail splits and she's like, oh no.
And if it splits twice, you know she's got twins in there?
Yeah.
Shit, maybe. I don't know. I mean, they didn't have very good like, sonograms or anything they back didn't have in the anything. Day. So maybe that was the best way to tell. I don't know. Good question. She's
don't tell me good question. That's not a good question.
It's a great question.
Even I know that's insane.
Well, it's no more insane than this. She's always in a bad mood because she's always hungry for children. She likes to eat the children. So who knows? Maybe Futard was just cooking up an offering for Gryla. Who knows? She's a mountain dwelling. She's a troll. Makes sense, right? But she comes down and hunts specifically for bad children, so at least she's discerning. She only eats the bad ones. She places them in a sack, drags them back to her cave, where she boils them alive, like a lobster, for her favorite stew. So she apparently doesn't just pick on human children. She's also been through 3 hubbies, Sam take note, 2 of which she killed because they bored her.
Well, I'm safe.
Yeah, you're not very boring.
Just watch out. Those 13 children, it's unclear which husband they are the children of, but they are demonic 7 dwarves. I feel bad because we didn't really name all of the kids before, but now that we're talking about the mom, I feel like we owe it to her to at least name all 13. Sheepcoat Clog. He's peg-legged.
Well, that's a surprise.
And he fancies sheep. I'm going to leave it there. Gully Gawk.
Wait, you're leaving it there?
Leaving it there.
All right.
It also notes that his fancying is impaired by his peg legs. So Gully Gawk. Gully Gawk is the second. He hides out in ditches or gullies and waits for an opportune moment to run into the cow shed and lick the foam off the milk in the milking buckets. I mean, gross.
That's pretty innocuous. What is wrong with this family?
Not gonna hurt anybody. Then we've got Stubby. He's short, as his name would indicate. If your pie pan is missing, you can bet that Stubby has stolen it and eaten whatever pie crust was left behind.
See, some of these are fine.
Right. So we've got like Stubby, and then we've got a sheep raper.
Which ones of them are... Oh, Stubby is a whimsical.
Yeah. And then we've got Spoon Licker, which we talked about.
Totally fine with that.
Pot Scraper, petty thief of leftovers. Bowl Licker. This one hides under your bed and waits for you to absentmindedly put down your bowl so he can steal and, yes, lick it. Door Slammer. Did you just fall asleep? Not for long. This guy plans on slamming doors all night. Skyr Gobbler, which is a type of yogurt, Skyr. So if you leave that...
Is it a brand or a style?
I think it's a style.
Because that would be funny if they were sponsored. The same way like Coca-Cola is pretty much responsible for a modern interpretation of Santa Claus.
Right, which I like. I'm down with
what
that.
What if this weird yogurt company...
It could be the next hot thing in yogurt. That's There's true. Always a new hot thing in yogurt.
Yeah, Greek is so last year.
Oh my God, yeah, this is Icelandic yogurt, Skyr, but it doesn't last long because Gobbler comes and gets it.
Freaking Gobbler.
Sausage Swiper steals your sausage. No, nothing deeper than that. Window Peeper. Starting to border back on some uncomfortable things here. It just says in this wonderful list of characters, he's watching you right now. Doorway Sniffer has a very large nose, which he uses to sniff through doors and locate leaf bread, which is a traditional Icelandic Christmas bread. Meat Hook, we talked about.
Love Meat Hook.
Meat Hook's you, Byron,
sure.
Right? Candle Stealer follows children around so he can steal their candles, leaving them in the dark. And we all know horrible things happen in the dark. Yeah, those were all the offspring of this one very busy, child-eating, tail-wielding, mean bully of a woman troll named Gryla.
Oh, that's fun.
Yeah, and apparently in 2010, The Onion blamed her for the eruption of the volcano in Iceland.
Oh, really?
Yes, they did.
Wow.
She's got her hands in everything.
Legitimized her.
Bringing it back full circle, guys, it's also pretty fun. Apparently the Yule cat is Gryla's cat.
So they're all part of the unified theory of Icelandic Christmas weirdness.
So we've got the trifecta in Iceland of Gryla, her weird freaking 13 sons, and her giant terrifying cat. Don't get me wrong, Iceland looks beautiful. Sam really wants to go there. I like traveling, so we'll probably make that our next big place that we go if we can find somebody to take care of Munchkins.
And me.
But we will not, and Byron, but we will not be going during the holiday season because I am not risking encounters with these creatures. Yeah, there you go, guys. Lots going on in other parts of the world when it comes to creepy, crawly, devilish characters around the Christmas season.
Thank you so much for that report, Kelly.
Oh, you're very welcome. Hey, so did you guys like A Christmas Horror Story?
You're just going to come out and say it.
I give it a
Oh.
Stop it.
And I think it was I think it was
Hey, what do you say?
Stop
we just,
it.
Let's actually review.
Okay.
The Holiday Horror Anthology, A Christmas Horror Story.
Yes.
Hope you're enjoying your visit here this evening. Now, on with the show.
A Christmas Horror Story is a 2015 horror anthology film directed by Grant Harvey, Stephen Hoban, and Brett Sullivan. Sam, could you tell us a little bit about this anthology?
Interwoven stories that take place on Christmas Eve as told by one festive radio host. A family brings home more than a Christmas tree. A student documentary becomes a living nightmare. A Christmas spirit terrorizes. Santa slays evil.
Christmas Horror Story.
Yeah.
Now, before anybody gets mad at me for suggesting this, I am going to own it. This was my suggestion that we watch this mm-hmm. because Sam and I, about a week or so ago, were like, hey, we're going to play a board game. Let's put something on in the background.
What was the game of board?
Imperial Assault.
Oh, fun.
Yeah. So we were playing and we were kind of watching this out of the corner of our eye. And I'm like, this actually looks pretty good. Weird. And then we watched more of it, and then when the game was over, we actually sat down and like fully watched the last part of it. Yeah. And I'm like, okay, Byron, we gotta make this our Christmas one.
And I said,
and you're like, no,
absolutely.
More spit.
I love that I was texting you, but that's what came out. You gotta get your phone fixed, Kelly.
I managed to talk him into it, and Sam and I watched it again just to make sure. I'm standing by it. This is a fun anthology. I like anthologies that weave in and out rather than it just being like one
yeah,
and then it's done
I
and then one
to get
and then it's
into.
Done. I like it.
It's
it
a non-traditional anthology style. Well, I guess maybe
interested.
It is traditional.
I don't know which it is, but I like it.
It still has a wraparound, but it tends to bounce back and forth between stories without separation.
The wraparound is...
Shatner.
Willie Shat.
Is the Shatner.
Playing what's his ass
the role he was meant to play.
He does play a bit of a Pontypool DJ. His name is Dangerous Dan. Yeah.
But I think it was very obviously supposed to be like a shout out.
It was a Grant
Pontypool.
Mazzy shout out.
It was really fun and he's absolutely hilarious.
The weirdest thing is I was going to recommend that if we weren't going to watch Black Christmas, that we would watch Pontypool, even though it's not a Christmas movie. For some reason it feels like a
snowy
Christmas
movie.
Yeah, it's a cold movie.
This was fun.
Well,
But it's got these four different stories. And so one story is about this shitty, horrible, awful family where the dad is apparently needing money. And so he's going
to
pitch some business idea to his great auntie, whatever.
He lied to his family about this, too.
Right. And then while there, they find out about some Krampus legend. And the shithead teenage boy breaks a Krampus doll. And then broken down in the woods and bad stuff happens.
Yeah.
And then we've got the story of these three teenagers who go to try and investigate this old boarding school.
It was like a murder
and suicide,
right?
And it was only a year old.
Well, the school is old. The murder itself was only a year old.
It was a
old.
Fresh murder, and it was out on YouTube.
Yeah, I liked it because it was my type of like creepy, crawly, haunted house type of thing.
It kind of reminded me of, what is that movie, found footage, not Paranormal Activity, but it's about ghost hunters.
Grave Encounters.
Yep. It had a kind of a Grave Encounters vibe, although it wasn't in first person.
Right. We had that one. And I thought that was really fun. It was nice to throw me a bone there. And then there was this really interesting story about this family who goes trespassing looking for a Christmas tree.
Which my dad has done before.
Really?
He's forced me over trespassing boundaries.
I like
and
your dad. Anything,
for a tree.
Anything in the name of Christmas. I'm down with your dad on this
one. I don't
know
if I respect him for that choice.
Oh, we routinely harvested trees without a permit.
Yeah. The son gets lost momentarily and then they find him and they bring him back. But
maybe they find him.
He's acting a little weird and shit starts going wrong.
Real wrong.
And then we've got Santa at the North Pole.
Pretty cheery, happy, upbeat guy.
Yeah. pretty good, but then the elves start acting weird, and elves aren't supposed to be able to die, but these ones start dying and zombifying, and it's pretty bloody.
And Santa turns into an action hero.
Yeah, and he starts wielding his staff to bludgeon elves to death. I mean, it's eclectic in terms of no matter what kind of horror you like, there's probably going to be something in here that hits on your faves. The acting is, I think, exactly what it's supposed to be. It's pretty cheesy in most places, but it's not distracting.
Throughout this movie, I weave in and out of thinking that it's cheesy and clever, you know?
It
balances
clever.
Between both of those things.
No, I think it's just clever.
Now, there's moments where I was like, this is a straight-up bad movie. And
yeah,
then, like, a second later, I'm like, huh, that's not that bad. And then it just keeps bouncing back and forth until the finale where I'm like,
Okay.
All right. I like it. So
yeah.
I'm wondering if the cleverness weighed heavily on me enjoying this movie.
Could be.
Because the quality wasn't quite there.
See, I feel like you and Sam would be sold just by Smiley, like, slashing his hand open.
I did like
and
that
running
scene.
Around
with... When an elf cuts his hand off with an axe, I mean, it's pretty fun.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I think I initially thought that the Santa storyline was my least favorite.
Yes, I totally agree.
But then it ended up being probably one of the coolest moments of this anthology.
Yeah.
Unquestionably. Totally agree.
This Krampus. What are your thoughts on the practical effects regarding the Krampus?
I thought that he looked a little silly.
Sure.
But it was really well done.
Yeah.
Like surprisingly well done costuming.
Boots.
Like when you watch other movies with
boots
bad
with
CG, like,
fur.
I mean... I think the CG in this movie was better than the Train to Busan CG.
It was. There was the opening sequence, they kind of really whiffed for the flyover of Santa's North Pole compound. That looked like it was from like a video game circa 1996.
One of those free email card, an e-card?
Yes.
Remember e-cards?
Remember them. Kelly still sends out about 50 of them every year.
I do not.
To serial killers?
No, I don't send e-cards. I send regular cards. I sent my Christmas card this week. It was
to Charles
Christmas
Manson?
Card. We will not be sending anything to Charles Manson with our Christmas card because there's a picture of our daughter on it and Charles Manson will never know what our daughter looks like.
I sent him a box of sugar plums.
Oh, nice.
Disgusting.
Dude. Cool. The Krampus fight was fun. I thought, yeah, the practical effects on the Krampus were actually well done as well. Like a good face that moved with it.
Very well articulated face, yeah. Which I think goes a long way. And they didn't dwell too long on the fights. I thought that you got to realize, I think that good fight scenes cost a lot of money.
I would imagine it's a major part of every movie's budget.
And they did a good job of showing the action, but not dwelling in a like extended kung fu fashion, because there are a lot of fight scenes in the Santa Claus Saves the North Pole sequence.
What was your favorite segment, Sam?
I liked the Santa Claus story.
Even though it was the dumbest at the beginning.
Yeah, it turned out to be my favorite.
Wow.
Absolutely.
I mean,
it wasn't... Going into it, the couple who goes into the woods with their son for a Christmas tree and come back with something that may or may not be their son was my favorite,
yeah.
I would say. But
one of the more subtle ones.
Yeah, if you tie in the conclusion and Grimmer.
Yeah, it does take a turn for sure.
If we're going by, you know, taking the whole enchilada, I definitely would say the Santa Claus.
There was a moment where I felt like we had a bit of a chillerama on our hands with the Santa Claus segment because it felt like the odd man out, the one that didn't work. The I was a teenage
the werebears.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But in the end, it wrapped itself up. Kelly, what was your favorite segment of this one?
It's really hard for me to say. I have a very specific idea of what Santa looks like and what his elves look like and what it should include and what it shouldn't include. And I don't really like blood happening at the North Pole, but that was pretty fun, I have to say. I mean, it's going to probably come as no surprise to you guys that my favorite one is the ghost school one, just because.
I thought it was cool, but I don't think it developed as much as I would have liked it to. It didn't have a lot of details.
Well, I was left with the question of why she was...
Okay, I mean, I don't know if that's a spoiler.
A spoiler.
Yeah, but it's pretty random just to say that.
That's like a blindside spoiler.
I don't know why the ghost is trying to...
Okay, now you get more specific and spoil it further.
Well, they say, I mean, I don't know, at the very beginning of that segment, they say she died trying to...
It was interesting.
I never really understood that, but I don't know. I liked it. I thought it was fun. It was creepy.
It was a cool twist on kids sneaking in, like trying to do a documentary thing. Kind of like
know
the gallows.
Yeah. And I know you didn't like the one with the family and Krampus, but that whole family was so wretched. I was so excited to watch all of them die. It made me really happy. I just sounded like Sam.
I was a little, I don't know where to go from there.
Yeah.
I got the Christmas spirit in me.
I thought that was cool. It had a lot of the more effective gore and some cool practical tricks, too, because that also dealt with a bit of a Krampus.
It did.
Was it the same Krampus? It must have been.
Oh, yeah. This is Well, I mean, it was, but it wasn't, right? Right? Because it went half.
Okay. We're not going to get into that.
Yeah.
As an anthology, though, this is unique. I couldn't tell between the segments who directed what. It must have been some sort of group effort that was all shot together because it's basically one movie with just different storylines.
Yeah.
Other than the Santa.
Yeah.
Which has a very, very good reason for not fitting in.
For sure.
Yeah. They all are very seamless. They feel the same. They look the same.
Which I have to admit was a bit startling when you enter into an anthology and you're trying to look for the separation. They become clear.
It just felt more cohesive than your average anthology, which I realize the purpose of an anthology isn't necessarily to feel cohesive.
No.
But it was a much more enjoyable watch for me. I loved this, and this is totally going on my Christmas cycle, guys.
Is that right? You're a bit of a dangerous Dan. You love Christmas.
I am. I actually feel like he was a very representative character of who I am at Christmas time.
Wasted?
We're just drunk.
Well, I can't be drunk right now because I have a baby growing.
I mean, it's William Shatner. There are two camps. They're either you love Shatner or you can't abide him.
I thought he really sold the performance. When you see something like that at the beginning, you're like, oh no.
It was so
How much time did they have him for, you know? But I think he really brought it.
It was so much fun. It was so much fun. Yeah, I thought he was great. High five, Shatner.
High five, A Christmas Horror Story.
Yeah. Yeah. And honestly, you guys, it's one of those. There aren't that many excellent Christmas horror movies out there. You can check out a top 13 list that I did last year at this time if you want to investigate a few of them. Go back in the archives on Friday. But this one would definitely bump one of those off the list because this is kick-ass and it's free on Netflix. And who doesn't have Netflix? Go check it out.
What would you give it?
6.7.
6.7. You said that earlier in the show. I was forced to beep it.
I know. I'm sorry.
So thanks.
I just really like it. It's fun. It's great, guys. Don't watch it with little kids, though. It'll really mess them up in terms of
Christmas.
That's
not good for kids. Sam, how about you?
I agree with Kelly. This was a really fun movie. Surprisingly dark in places, which I enjoy. So I'm going to go ahead and give this movie a 5.0.
Interesting.
What?
Interesting.
That's a bullshit score.
All right. I also
Santa is bringing you shit, and Santa is sending the Yule Cat
5.0
and that troll woman to both of
did
you.
Did we just tie 2 weeks in a row?
Did we?
Yeah, maybe.
Wow.
Assholes.
I give it a 5.0. It felt a little uneven at points, but overall, it did exactly what I wanted it to do. It was a successful horror film based around the holiday of Christmas.
Well said, Byron. Well said.
And those are our thoughts on Christmas Horror Story, which you can watch now on Netflix if you haven't already. I'd love to talk all about it in our newly exploded Facebook group.
Yeah, we have the coolest people, guys. It's pretty amazing.
Yeah, a huge spike
in
the conversation over at facebook.com/group/FrightDay.
Yeah.
I'd like to say thank you so much, guys, for hopping on board with us. It's making this thing into a bit more of a community, and I really love it.
I love all of our people.
I couldn't do it without you guys, for sure.
So if you're not hanging out there already, facebook.com/group/FrightDay.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about Christmas horror. Let's talk about all things horror.
I thought you were going to sing that really bad song from the 90s.
What's that? Let's talk about Christmas horror.
Yep.
Bloodstains and smeary wall doors. Sticky door handles. Neighbors don't do a thing. Right?
That was pretty jamming, Byron.
Pretty good improv.
I'm all right.
Pretty good.
I'm okay. Not much of it rhymes.
Nice work.
Okay. Wow. Christmas.
Christmas!
We did it.
We did it.
I hope that everyone listening right now, whether they celebrate Christmas or not, is having a warm mug of cocoa.
Yeah.
Yeah, or a warm mug of cocoa and bourbon, if
that's your thing. Spike a little bit of that. I hope that your holidays are going swimmingly. I hope that you're sharing this with your family. Oh, I love it. We gave them something pretty fun to talk about at dinner with their family.
Did we? What was that?
All the horrific things that happen around Christmas.
I feel like maybe that's not something that most people are going to want to talk about with their family.
But yeah, I remember 2 years ago, I was editing the first episode of Fright Day on Christmas Eve.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Which is cripplingly depressing.
That's not the saddest thing.
I mean, Byron, I think you're great.
I think you're great. I think you're both great.
I think
Merry
I'm great,
Christmas,
too.
Merry Christmas, guys. Sam, aww. Kelly.
Happy holidays.
Okay. Aww. Kelly, where can we find you on the internet?
You can find me at Kelly Friday on Twitter or KellyFriday.com.
I'm at Sam Friday. email me, sam@frightday.com.
And I'm at Byron McCoy on Twitter, Instagram, and Snapchat. Byron@frightday.com is my email address. And until next Frightday, I'm Byron.
I'm Kelly.
And I'm Sam.
Merry Christmas! No, this is not a thing. You guys, turn my fucking microphone on.
It is.
Do they have?
Why do I sound completely different from everybody else?
Because I don't know. Because you're a little shrill.
Are you talking into the front of it? It's probably not. Nope. Absolutely, you're not.
All right.
What?
Mim? I don't know.
Nope.
For sure. Don't know how to read. Mimiux? Mimiso?
Mimo?
Mimo?
I don't know.
Yeah, I think that's Mimo. Okay.